There's so much to talk about in the second Aliyah of Parshas Kedoshim that we have to use judgment to decide what to focus on, and judgment is the theme as the Aliyah begins. Lo sasu ovel b'mishpat, lo sisaf neidol, lo sehadar p'nei gadol. Here we are commanded not to allow any perversion in justice, and among the ways in which that could happen is if we show favoritism to people, sometimes for understandable reasons, such as if the individual is poor or is great, we may be inclined to tilt the justice in their favor, and that is not right. And we also have to have an awareness of the whole picture and the notion of Lifnei Meshuras Hadin as part of what was indicated by the message of Kedoshim Tiyu in the previous pasuk, and the pasuk ends with the mandate of Betzedek Tishpot Amisacha, and Chazal in various places have three different interpretations of this pasuk, which address three different populations. There is an instruction to Dayanim that they have to be careful to carry out their job at Tzedek, and therefore they can't do anything which favors one party or the other, or even creates the impression of favoritism towards one party or the other, because that will therefore bring about the reality of favoritism, because one party will think that he's getting an unfair deal, and therefore he will be inhibited. So that's one level, addressing judges. It also addresses potential judges, that those who are able to take up the cause of justice and may not otherwise feel motivated to do so are commanded that they must indeed take up that mission. B'tzedek tishpot amisecha, you should take on this mission of handling disputes. And most well-known is the interpretation that addresses everyone, B'tzedek tishpot amisecha, havidonis kol ha'adam l'chavschus, as the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us. And here there are many reasons why we have this obligation, and there are many different categories as to how it is applied. Rabbeinu Yonah and the Chafetz Chaim both discuss how we should apply this notion in different ways. If somebody is a tzaddik and generally does the right thing and does something which could be interpreted equally in either direction, so then to assume that this individual is doing the right thing actually is not a case of dam l'chavschus, that's simple fairness, because all the facts indicate that that's the case, so the individual is entitled to his reputation. And if somebody generally does the wrong thing and does something suspicious, so then, once again, dam l'chavschus would not come into play, because that would be counterindicated, because presumably what he's doing is indeed the wrong thing. And it's generally applicable when a person is of average character and does something that is subject to interpretations in either direction, then to tilt to the side of positive interpretation of kafschus, that's where this usually comes in. And then the question is, okay, so if it doesn't necessarily apply when somebody is of lesser character or actions that are more suspicious than that, so if it's not an obligation, that's one thing, but one can ask WWCCD, what would the Chafetz Chaim do? Is there any value in working harder to try to interpret this individual's activities in a more positive light? And that may go to the question of what is the purpose of this notion of dam l'chavschus. So many understand, like the Sefer Yireim does, that this is a aspect of what we read later in the Aliyah of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha, that this helps to create more harmonious social relationships, that presumably people would want that they should be given the benefit of the doubt, and that helps them to get along better with other people, that they should also extend the benefit of the doubt to others. So that's one understanding. But the Ma'ariel Diskin, in his comments on Chumash, and also in his Chuvis, we find a different interpretation, that there he suggests that this is something that we really do for ourselves in order to make sure that we should maintain a high standard of behavior for our own sake. So if we are inclined to believe that the people around us are all behaving properly, are all, for example, acting in an honest fashion, so then we will also believe that we have to uphold that standard. But if we are telling ourselves the people around us are not bothering to act properly, to act honestly and the like, so then we'll also not bother to hold ourselves up to that standard. So therefore, we're told to assume that in general people are behaving properly, so that we will also feel that that's something that we have to do as well. So this would seem to affect the previous question, that if the idea is we're trying to provide a basis for harmonious relationships, so then it would seem that we may not be obligated to interpret behavior positively if the facts don't point in that direction, or at least with a equal possibility of that direction. But if we can find a way to make it work, perhaps there's a value in doing that. But if the idea is that we're trying to set a standard for our own behavior, so maybe there would be a negative to applying that same lens to somebody who's known to be of low character, because then that would lead us to copy their behavior, and that might be counterproductive as far as this is concerned. Many of the commentaries on Pirkei Avos all came up with the same idea, that they noted that the language of the Mishnah is perhaps a little bit awkward, that it doesn't just say, have you done as kol adam l'chav zchus, that we should judge everyone favorably, but it has language of, have you done as kol ha'adam l'chav zchus, that extra hey requires explanation, and they suggest that perhaps the idea is that any given action that you're looking at may not necessarily lend itself to a positive interpretation, but the individual in his totality, that does give us more basis to see him as somebody who can be judged favorably if we take into consideration all the possible factors. And therefore we're told, have you done as kol ha'adam, see the individual as a whole and understand that there can be other things that can help us to see his character in his totality and provide a judgment that is more favorable. The Lubavitcher Rebbe noted that you could also see this in the context of the rest of the Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Asei lecha rav uknei lecha chaver v'avidanas kol adam l'chav zchus." And perhaps the message is that we should recognize that people are influenced by their educational backgrounds and by their social backgrounds, and therefore they should pick a good Rebbe, asei lecha rav, and they should do whatever it takes to acquire a good chevra, uknei lecha chaver, and recognize that that's going to impact how they turn out, and therefore factor that in when you judge people. V'havidanas kol ha'adam l'chav zchus. The next pasuk, of course, incredibly significant, the most likely candidate for the Isser of Lashon Hara, although there are many candidates in Chumash, Lo Seilech Rachel Ba'amecha. And there are many different translations as to the word Rachel, hard to render into English in an easy way. If you look at four different translations, you'll find four different words here, but it means something along the line of, don't be a talebearer. Don't go around telling stories. Although in contemporary usage, we have different terminologies based on the language of the Rambam and the Chafetz Chaim for Lashon Hara, Motzi Shemra, and Rechilus. They understand that Lashon Hara refers to disparaging speech and Motzi Shemra refers to that which is completely slanderous and completely invented, while Lashon Hara is perhaps that which has some basis in truth, although it's presumably not actually painting a true picture. Maybe it's subjective or distorted or incomplete, while Rechilus is telling what could cause fights in the understanding of the Rambam, usually understood to mean that you're telling people what is being said about them, although the Rambam doesn't actually say it like that. That's the way the Chofetz Chaim says it. The Rambam has it that you are telling people what is being said, and the Kesef Mishnah adds the words that it's being said about them, because presumably if the issue is that you're going to rile them up and make them angry at the people who are talking about them, so it's only going to be relevant if it's something that's about them, so therefore it's presumably what is being said regarding them. The usage of the word here, ba'amecha, in your nation, gives some the impression that the prohibition of Lashon Hara does not include speech about non-Jews. However, not everyone agrees with that. There are midrashim that seem to imply that the prohibition of Lashon Hara applies to everyone, and the Ramban, in his commentary here, applies the word ba'amecha to the people you are talking to, not necessarily the people you are talking about. So it's a question as to who exactly is included in this prohibition in terms of the subject, and certainly if we understand that there is a negative midah here, or if we understand that you are actually creating real damage in a demonstrable way, so there are certainly sufficient bases to be careful not to speak in a negative, unfair fashion about anyone. However, we know that the whole question of Lashon Hara is a very delicate one, and one that often has to be balanced against the principle of Toelas, that sometimes we do need to speak up in order to make sure that we can prevent harm to another or to help society. It's the category known as Toeles, and the Sefer Pesach Yishuv on Arachayim, which was written by one of the Dayanim in Vilna, complained that everyone gets very worked up about what they're not supposed to say as far as Lashon Hara is concerned, but they should get equally worked up about people who don't speak up when they need to. So the understanding of how exactly this concept of Toelis works, there are some who understand that that which is purposeful is simply not included in the prohibition of Lashon Hara because it means something along the lines of gossip, to say things which are both negative and of no importance. But others understand that it's because there's a values clash, that even though there is a general prohibition of speaking badly about people in ways that may harm them, ways that may cost them opportunities, but if somebody could potentially be at risk, there is a mandate of lo samar al dam reacha, and therefore one is obligated to protect people from harm, and dam reacha doesn't only mean people who are at risk of dying, as the Rambam understands in Sefer HaMitzvos. It refers to any type of physical or material or spiritual harm to any degree, so if it's possible for you to prevent that harm, you're obligated to step in. So therefore, when that is indeed the case, or possibly the case, so then there is a values clash, and often a careful analysis has to take place, but often it'll be the case that there is a mandate to protect the innocent and the vulnerable that will require speaking up. So that requires a very careful cost-benefit analysis. There are different ways of assessing how one comes to those conclusions. The Chafetz Chaim has a whole list of conditions in his Sefer. In one place, 5 conditions. Another place, 7 conditions. Others saw it differently. Some had fewer conditions, such as 3 conditions. The Chazon Ish was quoted as saying there's basically 1 condition. Is this being said l'toelas? Is it purposeful? But it does seem as we have a question of balancing these two values that are mentioned in the same pasuk, and that is going to be a judgment call that is extremely sensitive and requires intellectual honesty. And that could be why the pasuk ends with Ani Hashem. And we know often the Torah has that phrase there to remind us that God is watching when it's possible for somebody to present a certain image to the outside world, but it's not necessarily the truth. And here, this is indeed the case, that it's possible for somebody to speak in a disparaging way and claim that he is motivated only by Toelis, or it's also possible for somebody to hold back when he needs to speak up and protect others and claim that he is worried about the prohibition of Lashon Hara. And therefore, the Torah is reminding us here that God is watching and that your judgment has to be honest and careful in making this very crucial decision. The next pasuk tells us, Lo sisna es achicha bilvavecha, hocheach tochiach es amisecha, velo sisa alav chet, that we should not hate others in our heart. And here, there is a lot to say about this, that there is a discussion whether this applies only to that which is hidden, or also to hatred that is also expressed, and also public, whether it refers to behaviors such as giving people the silent treatment and not talking to them, or other ways of distancing people. The fact that the pasuk goes on to talk about tochecha, hocheach tochiach es amisecha, this is often understood in the context of averos min adam lamakom, that we have to correct people's misbehavior in spiritual matters. But some of the Rishonim also understand that there's a direct relationship between the beginning of the pasuk and the next part, that if one has a complaint against someone else, then he shouldn't just harbor hatred in his heart and refuse to speak it out. But it's important that he clear the air and that he say what he needs to say in order to have the hope of addressing it so that he shouldn't have to hate the person at all. The pasuk ends with the words "Velo sisa lav chet." The simple understanding of that is that you should bear responsibility for what the person is doing wrong and make sure to tell them and correct their behavior so that you shouldn't be responsible for what they're doing because you failed to stop it. But the Gemara has an additional interpretation of Maseches Erechin Adav Tezayin Amud Beis, that this is a limitation here, that you might think that in the course of giving the mussar, you can do whatever you need to do in order to set them straight, yachal afilu yishtan aponav, that even if you're going to end up making their face change color because they're humiliated by what you're doing, that's still justifiable because of the need to give them mussar. So the Gemara tells us that no, that's not permissible, that is a limitation. And as the Rambam points out, this is another example of the way the Torah sometimes conveys a lesson, that this prohibition of humiliating people is applicable in all cases. And here it's being taught in the context of Tochacha, when you may have thought that it's okay because of that motivation, and even then it's not okay, certainly when there isn't that motivation of Musar, it's certainly not permitted. So this is a part of the indication of just how careful one has to be when issuing this Tochacha. And the Gemara also says that it's not worthwhile to give tochacha when a person is not going to receive it. Kishem shemitzvah lomar davar hanishma, kach mitzvah lo lomar davar she'eno nishma. And that nowadays we don't even know how to give tochacha anymore, because we have to have a sensitivity and to express a love for the person that comes through. And failing that, we're not going to be able to be successful. And yet it's striking that there is what seems to be a contradictory message in the Gemara that says that one should give tochacha even 100 times. So it's hard to know how you're able to give tochacha so many times if you're not supposed to say something that's not being received. It seems like it wasn't received the first 99 times. So Rav Yoel Bakshi Daron, who was the chief rabbi of Israel, the Sephardi chief rabbi, so he suggested that what the Gemara is getting at is that one should adopt a tone with this tochacha that is so soft and is so well received that he's able to say it even 100 times, and he's not going to aggravate the person he's speaking to. The individual will be able to receive it, and perhaps that's the message here. Just to discuss one more pasuk here, because it's quite an intense and well-known pasuk. Lo sikom v'lo sitor es b'nei amecha v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha ani Hashem. So one should not take revenge or bear a grudge against the people of your nation. So here, this idea of taking revenge or bearing a grudge, so one might imagine that this is a reference to very dramatic acts of vengeance, and yet the Gemara actually gives a much more mundane example of what we're talking about here, that it's an instance where somebody wanted to borrow property from another, and that person declined, and therefore the first person, when he was asked, refused to lend property to that same person. That's considered to be an act of revenge, a violation of lo sikom. And if for the same situation he does lend the property, but he can't resist adding, I'm doing this for you, even though you didn't do it for me, so that's a violation of lo sitor. That's called bearing a grudge. So that seems to be a very mundane context. And in fact, the Gemara suggests that it only applies in that context, in a monetary matter, something dealing with property. But if it was a tzara degufa, if it was something more personal, so then there wouldn't be a prohibition of revenge. However, it's a question whether or not that distinction is accepted lahalacha. The Rambam and the Sefer Echinuch do not bring it, and the Sefer Yireim does. The Chafetz Chaim writes that it's a safek lahalacha, so we have to go l'chumrah and assume that we can't take revenge or bear a grudge in any situation. Although the Sefer Yad HaKetana notes that there are dinim in the Torah that do seem to be vengeful, and he suggests that that's the point, that those dinim are telling us that there are certain situations that are important enough that it's necessary sometimes to retaliate, but anything less is below that, and that's where we have these prohibitions of taking revenge. But whether there's a distinction between that which is monetary and that which is more personal, so the fact that the Rambam and the Sefer Achinuch don't bring the distinction, so that perhaps could be explained based on the Tamei HaMitzvos, that the Rambam and the Chinuch each have their own reason for what this is about, and that would explain in each case why they don't draw a distinction. So the Rambam understands that when people bear grudges and take revenge over petty matters, so then it just escalates and they get into feuds that go on for generations and society falls apart. So if that's the issue, it wouldn't seem to matter what it's about, and that would certainly seem to apply to personal matters also. And the Sefer HaChinuch understands that the issue is that everything bad that happens to a person happens for a reason, whether it's some kind of a punishment or an isayon, or it's ultimately for the best. But whatever that reason is, if one is going to obsess over the human shaliach, who is the agent of whatever is happening, so that is going to distract from whatever the purpose is, and that's not going to be helpful at all. So therefore, the Torah tells us that we shouldn't focus our attention on the human agent to think it's all his fault and we have to take revenge on him or at least bear a grudge. But rather, we should understand that it is coming from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the Sefer Yireim understands that this is actually a detail in the obligation of Chesed, which connects it to the rest of the Pasuk, as we'll discuss, and that the purpose is to tell us that we are obligated to love our fellow Jew and to engage in Chesed, even if we don't feel like he deserves it, even if he hasn't acted that way to us and he hasn't been willing to help out, we shouldn't take revenge and therefore decline to help him. So that's relevant to understanding what V'yahavta l'reicha kamocha means. Rabbi Akiva had declared Zeh Klal Gadol b'Torah, that means that it's more than a mitzvah, it's a principle from which other things can be derived. The Rambam understood that this is one of the makoros of Chesed that tells us that we have to act in kindness and do things in service of other people. However, others were unsure if this could be interpreted as an obligation to do something positive, because the language of kamocha is very difficult to translate, because to say that that means to an equal degree as yourself raises the question of how could you do things positively for other people to the same degree as you do for yourself. It's impossible to do that for even one person, let alone for everyone. To say I work to support my family, therefore I have to work just as hard for you to support your family, that's going to be impossible. So there are many who understand that we have to interpret it like Hillel does in the Gemara and Shabbos, in the negative, that it means what you don't want done to you, you should not do to others, which is known as the silver rule, as opposed to the golden rule of do unto others what you want done to yourself. And therefore, perhaps that's a little bit more in the realm of the possible. There are those who understand that it doesn't necessarily mean when we say kamocha that you should actively do as much for others as you do for yourself, but that you should want for others, v'ahavta kamocha, you should want for others that which you want for yourself. And therefore, you're not going to get in the way, you're not going to act negatively, and because you want it for others, so to whatever extent possible, you will do for others what you want done for yourself, but you're limited by your limited resources, so it's understandable that you won't go beyond what you can do, but whenever it is possible, you will act b'chesed and do what you can, and perhaps that's what it means. It's fascinating to note that the Gemara in the beginning of Second Parak of Kiddushin understands apparently that this mitzvah applies on a sliding scale, because the Gemara applies this to the obligation to love one's wife. So it would seem that the message that emerges from that is the same mitzvah that applies to everyone else is also the mitzvah that dictates the relationship between a man and his wife. So it clearly shifts in intensity and is applicable on a scale that shifts depending on the closeness of the relationship. And the Ksava HaKabbalah has a interpretation of Kamocha that brings us back to the concept of Dam L'Chavzchus that we spoke about earlier, and reflects a principle the psychologists call the fundamental attribution error, which describes the fact that if I do something wrong, I always have a way of understanding it that it's not really reflective of who I am, but it's just based on the circumstances. But if you do something wrong, I think that that defines who you are, and that's all about your character. So essentially, I am able to define things and to interpret things in a way that excuses me, and the Ksava HaKabbalah says I should extend that same kindness to you, that because I love myself, I am able to forgive myself, and I should have that same love for you. If you have tolerecha kamocha, just like you love yourself, you should have that love for others and be able to judge them just as favorably as you do yourself.